Hello and welcome to the Investors Chronicle Companies and Market Show. I am John Heumann, editor of the Investors Chronicle, joined today by Megan Boxall. How are you, Megan?
Very well, thanks, John. How are you?
Yeah, wonderful. And Algie Hall, how are you doing, Algie?
Very good, thanks, John.
Excellent. Here, you got a bit of a cold.
Yeah, it's seasonal. It's, you know, Christmas jubilations and all that.
Yeah, don't worry, it's me last week. I think I've polluted half the office, but there you go. Right, so we are getting close to Christmas. We've got this issue, one more to go before we have our little Christmas break, a double issue, which we've all been working very hard to put together, except you, Megan, because you've been working very hard on the feature this week.
I have, and that's not to say I haven't been working hard on
I know. It's just been giving you a bit of extra time to do
okay.
It.
But, yeah, I have.
And yeah, you're writing about crash-proofing your portfolio.
Yes, I have.
That is not to say that a crash is on the way.
No, but I mean, the more I've researched this, the more I'm thinking, yeah, it's definitely going to happen.
That's like saying, you know, it's like death and taxes, isn't it?
Yeah,
really?
Well, I mean, it is going to happen at some point. The markets aren't going to keep growing forever, but this is all about happening in early 2018.
Well, I don't know whether we should keep our fingers crossed that that's not going to happen or just keep our fingers crossed that the market's going to keep ramping ever higher.
It depends how you're positioned, I suppose.
If you've
got a lot of cash, you're probably, maybe you're sick of waiting for it to happen because it's... I mean, it's not a news story, is it? But I mean, as you make clear in the feature, Megan, there's lots of indicators suggesting that investors should be on guard.
Yeah. Indeed, Neil Woodford is one of the people saying that, you know, as he said to our former colleague Kate Beattie in an interview with the FT last week, an interview that we've been trying to get for years, years. Lots of red lights flashing everywhere, more than it is ever seen. Anyway, we'll come on to the crash-proof portfolio. Algie, you're going to be talking to us about your stock screen this week, which I thought was particularly interesting because it's looking at sectors that apparently offer value right now.
Yes, it's trying to find a mix between value and momentum, long term value, short term momentum. See what it throws up, and it's. I think it is quite interesting the results from it.
I think the two things go hand in hand, actually.
Well, I think the screen is telling a few of the same stories.
I think so, and it's kind of what I've tackled in my editorial this week. Let's come on to that. Let's quickly go through some of the kind of news and results before we get on to the big stuff.
Yeah.
Megan, you've been busy this week writing news too.
I have been covering the news in Emma's absence.
Where should we start? Should we start with CVS, which had a horror?
Yeah,
and there's
been
a few horrors this week, actually.
Yeah, but me and Andrew were just saying that there isn't an awful lot of good news this week. Because often there's quite a lot of bad news, but in the case of CVS, the share price reaction is just crazy, and it is... as the title says, the price you pay for enormously high expectations.
Tell us what CVS does.
CVS is a veterinary company, so it's the biggest veterinary owner in the UK. It literally owns practices, and it grows through acquisition. It just buys up loads and loads of these surgeries for small animals, companion animals, horses, farm animals. And yeah, it does it very, very well. But
people loved this story.
Yeah.
This was a classic growth story. Everyone was buying into... Looking through the acquisitive-led growth, there was some organic growth there too, one presumes.
A little bit. So there has, like, historically, it's always been around the 5% mark. Last year, it went up to 6.3%. So it was a great year. So that was the 2016 financial year. 2017 financial year, it's dropped to 4.3%, and investors have just completely panicked.
So they're panicking about the organic growth, right?
Because the organic growth is, well, it's... not great, and it's not nearly as good as it was last year.
What's the rating on the shares, incidentally?
Well, it's now 17, but it was about 35.
So that's quite pricey. So as you say, a lot of expectation baked into that.
Absolutely. And the other thing that is a potential red flag is the fact that they're saying that there are fewer vets lurking around who actually want to come and work in a practice, in a practice like CVS.
When you say vets, you mean qualified people?
As in people who literally want to perform veterinary surgery on animals. Like that, there are just less vets in the UK than there used to be. The reason for that, I have no idea, but it's becoming a bit of a problem. So what they've decided to do is they're going to pay their staff a bit more. But people, I assume, are a bit worried about what that's going to do to the margins. But CVS has also said that they're just going to hike prices. I mean, people aren't going to stop paying for their animals to be cared for. So
I was going to say, we haven't stopped loving it. We're Britain.
Oh, I know.
We love our animals.
Yeah, and that trend is still growing enormously. It's growing faster than ever. People are willing to spend whatever it takes to keep their animals alive. You had a crazy story about your hamster, didn't you?
My daughter's hamster.
Excuse me for the inane cackling here. Your hamster? I didn't even know you had a hamster.
Well, my daughter's had several hamsters. They don't last for long, but when they get ill, you do have to go to the vet and get them their tiny, tiny amounts of antibiotics, which then you have to literally give to them through a thread.
So please tell me, what is the average cost of a trip to the vet?
I can't remember. But I think it's about, you know, it's about 50 quid or something you end up.
How much is a hamster? Through.
Hamster? Well, a small fiber. Multiple of that. Yeah.
Oh God, I'm feeling evil now. Evil cackling here.
The trend of investing money, spending money on your pets, it's not going to go away. So I think they're going to be able to raise the prices, and hopefully that will sort out the fact that they need to spend a bit more money on their staff.
But presumably this is nervousness as to whether they can actually raise their prices.
Yeah.
People won't just not having pets or... But we do know, you know, we always see the ads, Christmas is coming, you know, yeah. Puppy's not, you know, not just for Christmas, it's for life. People do get this kind of, you know, rose-tinted view of owning a pet, and it is actually a bit more difficult, more expensive. I mean...
Yeah, it is quite expensive.
It's very expensive. Yeah. So maybe...
As can be owning a very highly rated stock.
Well, thank you, Algie, for that wonderful link to the cover feature. Megan, you might as well also carry on with your tip updates this week, because there was some good news. And it's you again.
The tip updates have done. We're all right. So we had Circassia this week, which was very exciting. Poor Circassia has had some tough times when its drug trial failed this time last year. Now it's teamed up with AstraZeneca and they've got this drug. It's actually quite an old respiratory drug, but AstraZeneca hasn't really cared for it very well. And it's the market share and the revenue it earns from the drug has just been falling a huge amount. So what Circassia and AstraZeneca have now decided to do is retrial that drug and get some more data, which they can then put on the label and say, look, our drug does this. And the data they've got from the drug is fantastic. There is only one other drug in the market that has performed this well in a trial, and that drug makes $3 billion a year, which in the case of Circassia, that's a huge amount of money.
Explain to me the link between Circassia and Astra, how this has come together and why this is beneficial for Circassia.
So the deal is a partnership. So there were two drugs that AstraZeneca had. One was in the late stage of development, and this one that they've currently had results on was one that they wasn't doing very well.
That drug is?
It's called Tudorza.
Yeah. I was leaving you to pronounce that, because I ain't got a clue. like all drug names.
Yeah, they always have stupid names. But anyway, so the partnership was AstraZeneca got a whole load of shares in Circassia, and it gave Circassia access to the US rights to Tudorza and another respiratory drug. That the other drug in the partnership, Circassia and AstraZeneca will both pay a little bit more money towards the final stages of development. And then Circassia, I think, has the global rights to it. So it's going to be making the money on it. And AstraZeneca gets shares in Circassia in exchange. So for Circassia, it's massive, because these are two huge drugs which have come from one of the world's biggest pharmaceutical companies. And Circassia has now got access to them in the world's biggest pharmaceutical market.
Okay, so this is interesting. In respect of the tip itself, which has been a good one so far, you only tipped it in October, it's up 25%.
Yeah.
Fantastic, right. Good work. You might even get to wear the pants of power this Christmas.
Oh, I don't think so. I think, as you will see from the feature, another nice link there. There have been some that are up a lot more than that.
Are they not yours then?
Not.
Oh, well, never mind. Is this sort of deal something we can expect more of in the pharma space?
From AstraZeneca, it's done so many. It's ridiculous how many it's done, because it needs the cash. It needs, in the case of Circassia, didn't get cash, but most of these kind of deals it does, it literally just sells its drugs, takes the cash. And that's helped to prop up the dividend in the last year and a half when it's been struggling.
Has it had success like this with some of these other partnerships?
Yeah. They've generally been very successful. Another big one is AstraZeneca and Merck, which was our international tip of the year last year. And Merck hasn't had a particularly good year, but this partnership with AstraZeneca, it just seems really sensible, because the current new drugs are all so expensive. They're so much more expensive to develop than they used to be. So sharing out that cost a little bit, and also then sharing the rewards when they come, it seems like a really sensible move.
Does it leave... You mentioned that Astra is going to get some shares in Circassia as a consequence of this. Does that leave some kind of overhang, you know, as Astra wants to turn that holding into cash to prop up the dividend? Are we worried about that sort of unintended consequence of these kind of deals?
I didn't actually know if there was any kind of lock-in.
Yeah.
But in general, AstraZeneca hasn't been taking shares, it's been taking the cash. But when you speak to the CEO of Circassia, who obviously is going to speak about it, but in a positive way, he's saying that it's because and they see the future of Circassia being pretty bright. And I can see why there is that argument, because they're so cheap at the moment after their disaster last year. They've, as you say, they've 25% growth since October. It's more you're going to get than cash.
That's value. That's value. Actually, I mean, looking at the tips page this week, Algy, it's quite nice. I know you put this together, but they're all up. That's a bit of a rare treat.
Yeah, I know. I don't normally get the good news. Normally, that's taken by the news section
or the results section.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not all good news, because I mean, VP is having a bit of difficulty with a really great deal it did, but the shares are up nicely, all the same.
Oh, this is a regulatory issue, isn't it? A competition issue. It seems odd because the deal completed.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of a retrospective look at this.
So I think we just have to wait and see, you know, what's going on. The shares didn't react too, too violently to the announcement.
The CMA does not exactly have the most glowing reputation in terms of the way it kind of picks and chooses its fights.
No, it doesn't.
And it does seem like a bit of a weird one.
Yeah, I mean, also VP, they're a very... kind of, they've got a reputation as a very conservative team. They're very prudent. So you kind of think if anyone's going to have done their homework, you think they probably will have, and they'll have, you know, crossed all the T's and dotted the I's and whatever. But anyway, we'll have to wait and see. But the acquisition itself was really interesting at the time they did it.
It's a scale business, surely. I mean,
yeah, and that, I mean, they're really good operators. VP, hopefully they'll be able to do something decent with the, with that expanded equipment hire business that they've got now. Mm. If the regulator doesn't throw a spanner in the works and so on.
Indeed. Well, yeah, I doubt we'll they see. Will. I mean, they let Tesco Booker through. Surely they'll let anything. Anyway, let's talk about the cover feature, Megan. We've kind of alluded to the core themes of your feature, but mm-hmm. I guess you can sum it up as markets have had a good run.
Mm.
Some shares, it's not necessarily the UK, which is still suffering from the kind of the negative perceptions, sentiment related to Brexit. The UK doesn't look expensive. I think that's a given. But there have been some shares which have done extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
The US market is looking expensive. If there is some fallout, if there is a sell-off, it's going to come. It's going to start most probably in the US. Mm-hmm. And there will be fallout from that, particularly among higher rated shares in the UK.
Yeah, that is the general gist of the feature.
So what you have tried to do is look at, and you've used some of Algy Hall's.
I have.
Famous stock screening techniques.
Yeah. He was very helpful, actually.
Tell us what you screened for.
Momentum and how much share. So where we started was how much the share price has grown in the last year and in the last 5 years, and the companies that have seen share price rises of over 50%, we've took those out and said these are the ones that you've made a lot of money on. And there are a lot of companies. It's like, I think it's 114 in like the last year, so a lot of people could have done very well.
Mm-hmm.
So then we looked at whether or not there are actually financial metrics that back up that share price growth. So that's the earnings. They're making cash like regularly. So we looked at an average 3-year cash conversion. And they're not too expensive. So a price to earnings ratio of less than 20 times. And the share price is justified by the earnings growth. So for that, we use the PEG ratio. And then we took the...
And that's what you call your low risk momentum screen. Yeah,
exactly. So they're the companies that we've said they've done very well, but there's nothing really in the financial metrics to say that they aren't in the long term going to keep doing well. So we've taken the top 10, which tick most of the boxes, and three of them ticked all of the boxes. That was Games Workshop, Tapsica and Vitec. And then on the other side of the spectrum, we looked at what we've called high risk momentum. And they're the ones that are sort of on the opposite side of the spectrum. So they've got weak revenue growth, and it means one of them's got no revenue at all. High capex requirements, which means they're loss making. Poor cash conversion. So actually most of them are not even making any cash. And they're really expensive. And some of them, the valuations, you just can't even do a valuation metric on them. And they're the ones that we're saying that actually they've done very well, but there's nothing really to support that growth. So if there is going to be a correction, they're going to be the ones that hit for the hardest and also probably for the longest amount of time.
I hope that's not entirely true, because I've just noticed one of them on the list is in our tip section this week.
That is unfortunate.
I won't reveal the name. You can read the magazine. You know, we are a market here at the IC. We like to have a diversity of opinion. actually, I read that tip, and I think there is something to back it up in terms of what you can expect. It's why the past numbers don't necessarily tell you what's going to happen in the future.
No,
all absolutely. The time, and there are certain things going on in this company.
And if you were to ignore the fact that the markets may or may not correct next year, there's a lot to say that these companies will keep growing, because most of them are the sort of blue sky tech stocks, which if what we're saying, if trends continue the way they're going, they're going to do very, very well.
Yeah, so some examples that I remember reading about in the magazine recently are things like Sophos, for example.
Yeah.
Interesting company.
Yeah, really interesting. And like that's one that, it's done so well this year because there have been, hacks are so high profile, but it's not making any earnings.
But so then it's sentiment that's driving that. But yeah, they've been around for a long time, Sophos.
Yeah, they have, and they're a massive company. But yeah, they're still not making any money because they're investing so much in their antivirus platforms.
So presumably they're just trying to dominate the market.
Yeah, they are. But it's still a really competitive market. They dominate it in the UK in terms of like what the listed companies are. But it's a global industry. They've still got quite a lot of competitors.
Purple Bricks, I know it's on there. Yeah. That is a Marmite stock if ever there was
one. Yeah, there's this very, very contentious. Like, actually, the two people I sit in between, so Ian's on one side of the spectrum with Purple Bricks and Jonas is on the other, and they have heated discussions about...
Well, it must be fun to be in the middle of.
Which side of Purple Bricks you want to be on. Jonas has it on a buy tip as well. It's another one that he thinks...
Well, he has since the beginning, and I remember him being criticised for that on our comment section, but it's done very well.
It's done so well. Even he tipped it after it had already done... very well, and now it's done phenomenally well since then.
Housing market though, estate agency. But having said that, Angie, it reminds me somewhat of Rightmove, maybe to a point, which we called wrong forever.
Yeah, no,
I'm going to rephrase wrong. That. Well, you called wrong.
Well, I mean, also my mistake with Rightmove when I was writing it was that I thought its market was penetrable by
Google, I think. Where
there are different companies with different business models, and actually, what I've learned.
We've got to learn.
A company that owns that much of the market, it is a moat, they call it in investment parlance. So people can't get in because it has so many of the eyeballs that the advertisers are forced to go there. Well, that's what Rightmove has kind of, shown up till now. It just hasn't given away any share. So it is in this commanding position, which means it can earn these amazing returns on the tiny bit of capital it has to put into its business. So, it is an incredible business.
Purple Bricks, not quite the same, but...
Yeah, well, Purple Bricks, I guess you have to ask, does it have a kind of real moat? Does it have a way of commanding the market in the same way? Because it's listings again, but it's also all the way through to sales.
I don't think it does have the same sort of moat as a Rightmove.
It's harder to understand, isn't it? But I mean, time will tell, I guess, as it develops as a business. But it definitely can undercut the players who are in the market who are having to actually go out there and show people around properties.
But they could also come back with similar models of their own.
Yeah, it's a model that
It's a pricing model, basically.
Yeah,
There's nothing to stop bastards and thieves doing the same thing.
Does it have something special? Does the fact that it is now a recognised brand?
Yeah, it's the brand, isn't
mean
it?
Mean that you actually can't get in there if you're new to the game.
Not sure about that. Rightmove, yes. Purple Bricks, I think the jury's out. Maybe I should sit in the middle of Ian and Jonas. No, actually, I don't want to do that. let's talk about the low risk, because that's what we really are interested in. Companies that, if there's a correction, they might hit a little bit, but they're likely to bounce back because there's something there. Let's talk about Games Workshop.
Yeah, so because, Games Workshop,
being a,
really
being a geek.
Did you like the Star Wars reference at the start of the...
I really did, yeah. No. I'm not even going to see it.
Stunned silence.
Why?
Because I went to see the last two and just found myself almost falling asleep.
Oh,
I don't care.
Shame.
Mark Hamill looks a bit like Oliver Reed now as well, which is a bit weird. But no, I'm not interested. Not interested.
That's blown my mind.
Yeah, I know. This time last year, I was massively excited about the next Star Wars film. Now I'm not.
The one where they killed everyone?
I don't even know. I can't remember. I told you I don't think I made it to the end awake.
Yeah, well, that was a bit of a letdown, that one. But the other core Star Wars was great.
Anyway, let's not talk about Star Wars, because Star Wars is boring.
Games Workshop has had such a great year, and it is, I think it's the fourth best performer this year. So, yeah, there's a lot to say that that's a momentum that can't be justified. But actually, it's not even that expensive at the moment. It's got a PEG ratio of 0.1 because it's growing so fast and it's forecast to keep growing at that pace.
It's a funny company. I mean, over the years, it's had its fair share of ups and downs. I've tipped this in the past. I always really liked it. I always thought it had something interesting about it. It had a very niche audience. It had a moat. It's not a business you're going to get into.
Yeah, it's too niched for anyone else to bother trying.
No one's going
to
bother.
I mean, what's the point in trying to get into that if you're not Games Workshop?
Well, this is exactly right. And Philip Ryland and Todd Wenning, who's an American that writes for us sometimes, you know, they've looked at this moat issue on a number of occasions. They've both identified a company called WD-40,
oh, yeah,
which you can buy in America. Yeah, it's big enough for it to be an amazing business. Everyone knows WD-40. You can do 1,001 things with it, probably more if you put your mind to it. There is a list on their website.
Is there actually?
Absolutely. But it's not big enough for someone to want to go for.
But also, its potential to grow is limited. So its potential to create great returns on the business that it's doing is amazing, but the potential to actually reinvest that capital is limited for WD-40. It's a fantastic business, but it is what it is, kind of thing.
Which and
is
you could part of the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's Games Workshop the same.
Yeah, so Games Workshop does seem to have done very well from Game of Thrones and people. Like,
I don't think they do anything Games of Thrones, though.
People are getting back into that sort of quirky...
Dragons.
Yeah, exactly. That sort of thing. So I think they're probably pretty reliant on external market trends.
I think that's true. If I remember rightly, when I was covering... You've covered them as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I read about them for a stock screen, I think, recently.
No, you didn't, but years before that. We both used to swap coverage of that.
They're very interesting. Also, they really don't care about the stock market very much, or they give the impression, management give the impression, they don't really care
where
their share price is. They like their business, and they get on with it, which is great.
That's
but
nice,
it,
yeah.
If you remember, they essentially withdrew from the city, so we're not going to talk to anyone anymore. We're just going to run the business, put out an annual statement, and
they're kind of a private company, in effect. But also this year they've had a relaunch of one of their games, which has gone down particularly well as well. So it is kind of an exceptional year this year, and then it normalizes a bit next year as far as the brokers end, and then it kind of grows from a more normal level. So, so a lot has been going right this year, and everything's going right for Games Workshop this year, which is rare. Normally, be a bit more of a mixed bag, but it seems like everything's going well at the moment, which is really great. And it means the shares have really picked up, and earnings are being appreciated.
236%.
Yeah, I know, it's amazing.
It is amazing.
The upgrades are phenomenal. Like the earnings upgrades. Have been pushed through this year. Just, you know, ridiculous.
Well, this week was one. No, it's like another.
Yeah, they keep on coming.
Yeah. Oh, it's your favourite sort of graph, isn't it? The old, like, graph.
If there's a trend which is actually happening and being underappreciated by the market, it can drive phenomenal share price movements.
All right. Anyway, lots of companies listed in this feature. So worth a read. Do we think there's going to be a crash?
I think there's going to be a correction. I think it'll be like...
Yeah, that wouldn't have made it such a good correction-proof your portfolio.
Ready for a little slight downturn.
Protect your portfolio against a slight dip.
Yeah, it doesn't carry the same sort of headline. But I do think that...
Who says we don't sensationalise at the IC?
But there is there are so many factors which are saying that a correction is overdue in terms of time. I mean... This has been an exceptionally long bull run.
Yeah, but you have a great quote in here. It's like, you know, trying to judge whether there's going to be a crash.
Yeah.
It's like trying to judge a book by its length.
No, by the length of words.
Length of words.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Fahad Kamal from Kleinwort Hambros, he came up with some fantastic quotes. He said, "If you had assets 5 years ago and you haven't made a lot of money, I don't know where you've been hiding." He's just like, that's nailed it. That's exactly true.
Well, everything's gone up. That is, I suppose, a scary thing about the market that we've had this. Well, this is why everyone's scared. I mean, in fact, it's a kind of leveler to any fears about a crash. People should just read Chris Dillo's bubble piece, which is exceptionally good.
Isn't it?
It's just like, you know, it's kind of the we don't know where we are in reality kind of piece, which, you know, which
classic Chris Dillo.
Yeah.
But he's right. This is the nature of markets.
But we do. I mean, what we've got, a situation where valuations are massively high. We've had this incredible period of easy money. Mm. Signs that it's been being spent really inefficiently because we've got no productivity growth or wage growth.
But this goes back to the Luke Johnson piece, which you kind of said.
When you wash the system with I've forgotten what he said, but now we have the monetary policy reversal happening, and it's a question of where does this take us? Mm.
And if it does remove liquidity, then companies have been lifted because there's more money in the system.
There's
been a constant buyer for a key asset which everything else is priced off. And also what's interesting at the moment is we've got the flattening of the yield curve, which essentially is people saying, listen, the outlook isn't that great. And if the outlook's not that great, then how on earth do we justify the high valuations? Because it suggests that the earnings growth won't be good enough to sustain them. In the fact that we have low interest rates, that isn't a reason to push up valuations, which people have been arguing. It's a reason to be wary about where they are because there isn't going to be the growth. And, it's all academic. Who knows what's actually going to happen? But it's just a very interesting time to be watching the market.
And I think
a lot of people are very nervous for these reasons. And also all the kind of red flag things which we all see, like the Bitcoin and you know everything. Like
Bitcoin's just crazy.
Neil Woodford, as I mentioned in my editorial, he's talking about the gulf between the valuations on growth and value. It's as big as it's ever been.
Huge, yeah.
It's huge. We were talking about the resurgence of value earlier this year, and it kind of looked like it was going to happen for a bit.
Yeah, it hasn't really. But I mean, that's a phenomenon which is kind of tied up with interest rates and where they may go. And all those value investors, when we published that piece, their main gripe, if there was one, was that zombie companies were lurking everywhere. So the good value companies weren't able to thrive be re-rated because they were competing against companies which should have been out of the picture ages ago.
Indeed.
So the returns weren't coming back.
Let's move, Algie, thank you, Megan, to your stock screen, because I would suggest that that what we're talking about here, especially the sort of the fact that value is so unloved, shines through in this week's stock screen, which is about which sectors are likely to perform well in 2018.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of it. I mean, this builds in momentum as well, because, I mean, you should never underrate momentum. A high valuation is, we could complain about valuations for years gone by, but momentum can keep going.
Yeah, so let's go through some of the sectors that you've picked out and actually explain why you think that they are potentially attractive next year.
Yeah, I mean, the screen's picked them out. So the screen...
You are the screen, Algie.
Well, I have made up the screen, so you could say, ultimately, it all goes back to me. But, I mean, it's just a kind of mechanical process, I suppose, as well. But so what the screen looks at is the way each individual company is being priced against its kind of ultimate source of earnings. So either the net asset values for kind of financials or something, or sales for companies like retailers. And then it looks at where that valuation is in the historic range. So I've tried to get 12 years if I can, but I've taken a minimum of 4 years. So if it's cheap against its history. And then it also, it ranks all companies. And then it takes a sector view on that, ranks all sectors for that, then it ranks all sectors for 3 month momentum.
Tell me what this Zeus ratio is, Algie.
The Zeus is, I think I describe it best in the piece. With the cynicism of an investment banker, I've managed to torturously arrange the words that describe the ratio to create the acronym Zeus. That being
tortured. Go on, keep going.
Okay, now here comes the real torture. Well, you asked for it. The thumb screws. Z score of value to ultimate source of earnings.
Okay.
Which, coincidentally is the name of the daddy of Greek gods.
Okay. So what is it telling us? What should we be looking out for?
There seems to be a domestically orientated companies,
which are exactly the ones that are being talked about as being unloved, the sectors that everyone thinks is going to get thumped by Brexit.
Yeah. So pubs and restaurants is at the top. And also, you know, the interesting thing is the, you know, the share price performance over the last 3 months hasn't been dire. So it suggests that maybe people have hated these companies, but maybe they don't quite hate them so much anymore. Maybe they're starting to warm to them and see that there is a value case there.
So you're not necessarily suggesting people catch falling knives?
That's what the screen's trying to achieve, yeah. And then food retailing next. Gambling is there, which is, I mean, you know, there's a big regulatory issue there.
Well, having said that, I suspect if you'd invested in gambling yesterday, you'd be looking all right today, yeah, because we've had the Ladbrokes Coral news.
I know,
GBC's looking to buy them.
Our colleague Julia actually was telling me we should make that a tip of the year, which obviously we can't now, unfortunately.
No.
Was it going to be takeover tip of the year?
Well, it's done, isn't it?
Well, yeah, done. I know, but that would be a great call had it happened.
What would happen was we'd have put it through as a takeover tip of the year, between writing it in mid-December and January.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it would have happened.
Yeah,
yeah, that would have been.
It's done. It's all done now. And then we've got lenders and transport. They're fairly domestically focused. Car dealers. I mean, that's mainly because the shares are so cheaply priced.
Yeah,
but for some reason,
people hate car dealers right now.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote up the car dealers as the cheapest sector. I did a little write-up of the top-ranking sector, the cheapest sector, and the sector with the most momentum. And car dealers, there's just so many things that people are worried about. And a lot of it hinges on the PCP deals, as they've been called, and people are just like really scared they're going to flood the market with second-hand cars, and they're going to cause real problems for the manufacturers who the car dealers obviously, you know, sell their merchandise. So that, yeah, the car dealers could be in for a really hard time.
Well, new registration has been awful.
And is that the uncertainty? Yeah, Brexit uncertainty, everything. Yeah, so I mean, there's a whole load of fears, which
retail is an interesting one, which is definitely in the firmly in the top half of the table.
Yep, firmly in the top half of the
table. It's kind of in Tottenham Hotspur type position rather than West Ham United type position.
And I mean, the retailers have come back quite a bit from mid-year. I think when we finally tipped next in the middle of the year, I think that we actually got that quite close to the most gloomy phase for the retailers during the year. But domestically focused retail, there's a lot of gloom over Brexit uncertainty, rising costs on many fronts.
Food retail's right up the top.
Retail's right up the top also. That's got some good momentum behind it. But also within all these, there are also some of the ones which, you know, we know about as being good performers this year. So technology companies up there, they've got quite a good position, which is based on their momentum. They're expensive, but they've been rising strongly. And also internet stocks, as I've called them rather blandly, but that would be your right move in companies like that. They're quite highly rated also by this screen.
House building, right down the bottom. Well, not quite at the foot of the table, not in the relegation zone, but flirting with relegation here.
Let's hope none of these sectors are entirely relegated.
No, but house building is...
Especially healthcare, which is right at the bottom.
Healthcare is right at the bottom.
But. Yeah. Good luck, Megan. House building is one of those sectors that everyone's made a lot of money from.
Yes.
Just as Megan talks about in the feature.
But it's,
and the questions have been there for a while. When is the end going to come for this amazing run that they've had?
The reason they're at the bottom is because they're expensive. But they've been expensive for several years, and they have still delivered on in terms of, you know, making people money.
Mm.
I'm going to be a keen reader of Simon Thompson's piece on the house builders trade, though.
That's a technical trade.
It is a technical trade, but also, well, he was saying last week, wasn't he, that he looks at the valuation, he looks at how they're trading. Is it
like Groundhog Day? Is he like, you know, Punk's a tawny Phil? Simon comes out and says, buy the house builders at the beginning of the year. Simon says no.
He's going to have 8 more weeks of winter.
Anyway, it's a great piece just to get a nice framework for where the sectors are. Respectively, I think it's really interesting. It confirms some things.
It's food for thought. I mean, it's one way of looking at at the market. So I mean, I wouldn't make any grandiose claims for it, but it does just concentrate on those two kind of stalwarts of investment, value and momentum, and just let's see how these sets faring against that. And it did take me absolutely ages to do.
Yes.
The spreadsheet alone that powers this takes 15 minutes to open up on my computer.
I think you need a new computer.
I think
you're listening, IT, Algie needs a new computer.
That's all I want for Christmas.
I'll buy you one myself, Algie. All right, I think we ought to call it a day there. I mean, there's so much in the magazine, lots of results. Mm. I know you've written a few, Megan, a particularly busy week for you.
Yes,
again. DMGT. Oof, shocker.
Yeah, very interesting.
But
let's
not go there. Media is a bit too close to home. Really. Impacts we like, actually. I've noticed that. Algie, that's one we've looked at before. I know you've written up in the stock screen.
Amazing asset growth,
which sort of chimes with what we wrote in last week's feature by Tom Dines, that there is a growing recognition that investors need to pay attention to environmental aspects when investing, and certainly, if nothing else, hedging their portfolio against the risks that environmental concerns bring. We have, actually, following on from Megan's feature, another feature by our friend Neil Wilson, looking at a couple of bombed out companies that he thinks might recover this year. Kind of chiming back to the whole value thing that we've been talking about. John Barron is in this week's magazine. A few strategy ideas for the to round the year off on for the investment trust investors out there. Lots in the personal finance and funds section, which they will talk about tomorrow. All the usual comments, lots more in the news section. And thank you, Megan. Thank you, Algie. And thank you all for listening. Crash proof your portfolio, £4.90 in all good news agents, or get online and subscribe. We'll be back again next week for our last podcast of the year. Speak soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.